Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Hilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
We come to you, the whole world, and each other the day after finding out Last of Us 2 has been delayed indefinitely, which sounds more catastrophic than it probably is. It's mainly, obviously, down to the fact that the whole big old, slightly apocalyptic, pandemic-y coronavirus COVID thing's going on, and they can't guarantee full rollout in terms of physical copies and things like that, so they're delaying it until the entire world can experience it at the same time. And we do have, Josh, you did a video on the real reason why it's been delayed.
Yes, the real reason revealed courtesy of Jason Schreier of Kotaku, who essentially clarified that it's not a problem with Naughty Dog or the game's development because the game is more or less finished. They're just fixing bugs. It's the fact that Sony can't print discs at the moment or ship them out to shops because all the shops are closed and all the manufacturers are shutting down. So they're essentially just waiting to maximize the rollout and give it the launch that it deserves. But I do want everyone to know, right? I experienced this game delay exactly like that community meme, you know, when Donald Glover goes out and he returns and everything's on fire. We were doing that charity stream last night and I popped out to do a toilet and I came back and you guys were talking about something and Ash was saying, it's an April Fool's, and Scott was like, no man, it's not
an
April Fool's.
That was the weirdest thing, because when that happened and like I couldn't figure it out, I couldn't know what was going on, and Osley was saying that it was indefinitely delayed, and then Ash, you were like, no, it's an April Fool.
Yeah,
I want to believe that. It's not an April Fool's.
It's just got a bit late. I don't know what they're doing with this lightness, but I can only assume it's another delay on that front. But it's, yeah, it's just an April
Fool's. Been delayed. It's but figuring that out in the absolute madness that was like being live and then like, yeah, being told that it's been delayed indefinitely was not a nice time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, at the minute we're waiting however long it takes for things to get back to normal and shops to open again so they can put the game out. But yeah, I guess initially, because we're gonna break down, they've released a whole batch of new screenshots. We're going to talk about sort of some of the details that are in there, some of the predictions, and we can just talk about Last of Us 2 stuff in general. But what do you guys come down on the delay? Were you immediately gutted or are you immediately gutted
because it's felt like so long coming and is the game that everyone is excited for and is such an exciting thing on the horizon that was like a little light in this whole dark time, and for it to be delayed is just really disappointing. And then to learn that it's delayed literally because of physical disc like launches, I felt that stung a bit. I get it and it's fair, and I'm happy they've got time to refine it and do it properly, because that's the thing, they got one release, haven't they? And if you want it to be right. But yeah, instant upset. Ben Roy was probably the most upset on the live stream. And I felt his pain. Like,
I just, like, the amount of people that have like switched over to just buying digitally, like I tend to buy digital the vast majority. Like Final Fantasy VII, the remake, when Square Enix put their statement out, they were like, oh, you know, it's going to affect production, it's going to affect the launch, but we're going to do it anyway. And I think, I don't know, like, where do you guys come down on the actual, the reason being the physical distribution thing? I guess just physical sales count for way more than you might think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been trying to like rack this in me brains this morning. I think I've said in the news, I think that Final Fantasy VII, the way that's been handled, is is probably, you know, influenced Sony's decision quite massively, because although they've done the right decision, they've released it digitally still, and they've explained that, look, physical copies are kind of going to be all over the place. We've already seen that Street Date Broken. We've seen a lot of people playing it now. Hundreds, if not thousands of people are already playing it before the review embargo is even, you know.
Genuinely, it makes the review totally worth it. It makes the review so worth it. I'm glad that, you know, it's out there. And I'm glad I can talk about it.
But imagine if that happened to, like, The Last of Us, which, again, I said in the news, is, like, it's such a story-driven game and everyone is going to be, you know, wondering what happens to these characters. Imagine if thousands of people were just playing it before you could get a chance to get your hands on it.
People posting spoilers!
Yeah.
This might be the sort of thing that could be, whatever the biggest spoilers are, like, yeah, screenshot does the rounds, a couple of sentences do the rounds. I don't know, like, when this finally drops, like, yeah, they didn't talk about story stuff in the statement. They just said it was, like you said, Josh, it was related to the production and, like, the means of production stuff, but, like, I mean, when it eventually drops, I'm gonna just live on it until it's done. Like, I can't, you know, even risk the idea of something being ruined, like, it, considering how important it is for this story to be told.
No, I'm the same. Like, I'm still debating whether or not to take a day off for it, but I think at the very least, if it comes out on a Friday, I will be playing it through to Sunday night and not checking any internet at all, or even talking to you guys about it. I'll come to you guys after I finished it with complete thoughts.
Just come covered in sweat and grease, just like, it is the end. No, yeah, absolutely the same. Like, it needs to be a full straight experience. There is no breaks allowed, only sleeping, and it's like sleep in front of the TV, wake up, turn it back on. That's what the sort of level it's going to be when it actually comes out.
I also was going to say, like, the Cyberpunk or CD Projekt Red are yet to you know, get in the same boat. They did suffer one big delay, but they said, don't worry, we're going to move all of our workforce remotely, which is the way that, like, we're beaming in from you know, our own homes and stuff, and they haven't chimed back in to say, like, yeah, assumedly Cyberpunk is still on track, but, like, for the rest of the year, Cyberpunk and Last of Us were, like, the big two, and that was it. So I don't know if, like, that's gonna happen too. I guess it's, like, I don't know, like, there's plenty to play right now, so I don't hate the fact that Last of Us has been delayed. It's just that when you talk about games of the year, it was mainly a three-way toss-up between Doom, Last of Us, and Cyberpunk, and Doom might end up just winning it by default if this goes on for the rest of the year.
Yeah, maybe. Like, the Jason Schreier tweets that he made about the delay last night, the most horrible and yet one that I perversely can't stop reading, is someone asked him whether or not which companies will be impacted by imminent delays, and he just replied, all of them. which is incredible. It's like, okay, every game,
the emperor, all is getting, of them.
yeah all of them.
Yeah, it's I mean, like, you guys already did a pod on, like, how games are getting you through, kind of thing, and for me, there is, like, a window of opportunity for them to, you know, you have a captive audience, you have people at home who want to play something. Where do you guys come down on the conversations that we're doing the rounds as to, like, is The Last of Us even appropriate right now? Like, could you I could totally just play it. Like, I'm not in that camp that's just sort of like, because some people were basically saying that, look, it would be hard to play this game because of the parallels between quarantining and a virus outbreak, etc., etc. But for me, it's so much of a break from reality that I'm like, well, whatever.
I think that's you wipe out a whole genre of film and game if you say it's too similar to real life. And the whole thing of these sort of films and games and everything is sometimes to mirror society and look at different outputs and outbreaks and that sort of thing. For me personally, it wouldn't be too close. In fact, the closeness, I think, would make it more engaging to play, because you're like, oh my god, at least there's these parallels and this, that, and the other. But the appropriateness of it relies firmly on if it was aping this situation, which it's not. It came out it was, like, obviously designed years ago and has been going through years and years of production before we knew anything like this was going to happen. So it's not like they're capitalizing on a situation that is an awful world pandemic. They are telling their own story that has been in the works for years. So I think that needs to be kind of recognized as well, that they're not going, oh, okay, here's this and here's our version. It's more like, oh, this is awful timing.
If a dev turned this around in that time frame, was to sort of like, well, there's clearly a massive, you know, niche right now that we can sort of gain on, we might as well maximize the time. Like, plague the game.
I fully agree with what Ash said there. I think it's like a very sort of a personal thing, you know what I mean? Like, when I saw the headlines last night, and it was, I think the headline I saw was saying that, you know, Naughty Dog don't think it's the right time. That's initially what I thought. before I read the whole article, I thought, oh, maybe it's because of, you know, what's going on right now. Maybe they don't think it's the right time to release it. And for me personally, I think, you know, it's fine if you want to indulge in that kind of media. Obviously, you know, whatever gets you through, if you, there's certainly some comfort to be found in the real world parallels, like Ash said. For me, I'm kind of on the other side of that coin, whereas, you know, I'm not watching Contagion. And even when I see the trailer for this Train to Busan sequel, I keep seeing that advertised
everywhere. Peninsula.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm so excited for that. But at the same time, man, it's not even close to, you know, it feels bad to equate what's happening now with zombie movies. But even that distance, I'm like, I can wait a few months before I watch this.
In that vein, Contagion could be a documentary. Like, it's ridiculous how one-to-one that thing is. Like, watching it, I was like, oh, so it originated from a wet market and like all this stuff and everyone's panic buying and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this just feels like someone's just stuck a camera on the wall.
But
like,
I found that really comforting, like, as in a strange way. Yeah, like, I was like, as horrible as Contagion is in the way that it plays out, seeing that someone had, like, made a piece of media about it and fictionalized it and kind of turned it into this story that ends okay, you know what I mean? I related to
that
more.
Say okay.
The end of Contagion is they see a vaccine produced and all that sort of thing. So at least I was like, oh, okay, geez. But it's like, even zombie media and that sort of thing where it's like, okay, it's the end of the world, it's the apocalypse, all these horrible things are happening. There's always like lights in those stories and points where the characters are having a good time with something or finding a fun thing with something, even if it's a very small, understated moment. And I think it makes you pick out those in real life as well a little bit more and focus on the good things and that sort of thing. Also, again, seeing a fictionalized version of it where it's too pushed to its extreme, also, I don't know, maybe it's perspective. I have no idea. For me, it's I don't know, maybe it's a morbid interest. I have no idea. But I think Last of Us would be good to play.
Yeah, I remember when Ben Roy said, oh yeah, I'm watching Contagion. That was in like day one. It was like, we saw word that things were going to change. He's like, I'm going to watch Contagion. Really?
There's a great YouTube video by someone called Dan Olsen who's just done a video called Why I Can't Stop Watching Contagion.
He's watching it all day though, day by day.
But it's I can totally get it, even though that's not I'm stumbling over my words because I know if I did watch that movie, I'd be the same. I wouldn't be able to stop watching it. And that's why I've had to kind of force myself to not put it on because there is a sort of perverse comfort in it hitting so close to home that I think, you know, if you can get some benefit from that, that's really, really good.
It's weird. I think, and another thing for The Last of Us in terms of, like, you know, is it right to drop it right now? Is that, like, the theme of the game, according to Neil Druckmann, was hate. And it's just like, and loads of stuff that they've put out. I mean, one of the early sort of, I'm not going to say controversies, but one of the early talking points was that initial reveal. I don't know if it was the very first reveal trailer, but the one where the guy says, like, clip her wings and they hit the hammer, attacks that woman, and it's all grim and horrible. And it's just like, I wonder how many people have the appetite for something like that. Like you said, it's like you could kind of steer directly into it, but they're about to release something that is like notably dark and macabre and twisted. And I'm so there for it. But,
I absolutely. As someone who, whenever they feel a bit sad or angry or have any sort of negative emotion, turns to like either horror movies or like heavy metal or whatever, or like things that reflect, you know what I mean? Like that reflect that inner turmoil in a way that then produces something of a story around it. I think having that outlet is a good thing. Obviously for certain people, it's not going to work for others. This is very much a personal story. And if people want to avoid it, I totally understand and think that that's absolutely fine as well. But I think kind of playing into dark, horrible things and seeing those out. Again, there's a weird cathartic. That's the word for it, isn't it? There's a playing out of it where you think, okay, geez, let's just get all this out in one horrible go, and then do some other stuff that's nice afterwards.
It's kind of like that meme, isn't it? You know, when the guy's out in the rain and he's pouring the shower on him or something. He's pouring, you know, all the water on top of him. It's listening to sad music at 3 a.m. when you're already sad. There's something surprisingly comforting in just indulging in those emotions.
You've got to embrace it. You've got to embrace it. If you run away from it, it'll just chase you. You've got to embrace it.
There's a bit of it that's kind of like, it makes you feel less alone in those horrible feelings as well, because you see something of a world that's maybe reflective of what's going on at the moment in a strange, exaggerated, paralleled way. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, it's comforting in that sense where you're seeing something so similar, so it makes you feel less alone like that. And listening to the sad music when you're at 3 a.m. with the shower and the rain and everything, it's like, oh, okay, well, this person has had all these feelings as well, and I can relate to that. And it's kind of like seeing all these angry people in The Last of Us and all the horrible things that they go through maybe is cathartic in that sense, because you're like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, well, these feelings exist out of my own self-loathing bubble that I'm having, and perhaps at the time, you know what I mean? I think that that's something to be said for it.
Basically, we heartily recommend Contagion, and the real Animal Crossing is The Last of Us 2.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. No, no, that's the exact opposite of what I wanted to admit.
The wholesome conduit. We should talk about the new screenshots, because to kind of placate people, they have put out, I don't know how many, it's like 20 odd screenshots, which sort of allude to more scenes that will be happening. One of the things that I kind of wanted to pick out is this show, I was going to call him Young Joel, but Joel as he was at the end of The Last of Us, the first one, and this show, it's like Joel and Tommy sort of overlooking the camp, and it seems that we're going to be getting way more scenes direct, like set directly after The Last of Us. I thought they were always going to jump forward to 2, but I guess they're going to show more of how Joel and Ellie's relationship maybe goes sideways and fractures, and maybe that's why he leaves and has to come back when she's back on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back at the other, going back to watch the other trailers in preparation for this podcast, that was already kind of hinted. The one where, you know, Ellie's at the dance and it's cutting between that and like the violence and stuff. I wonder whether that sort of, you know, jumping around in time and integrating non-linear storytelling is going to be more present. And these, you know, screenshots seem to suggest that. I like the idea that we're going to get that gap between 1 and 2 fleshed out, because, you know, I want to see Joel and Ellie at least kind of happy living this fake lie, you know, everything's all right. We're just going to accept what happened at the end as at the end of the first game as truth and try to move on for it. And then how that sort of fractures over time. I think, you know, this might be the last time we ever get to see these characters spend time together. And I want as much of their relationship to be fleshed out as possible.
Yeah, I guess in terms of it was like aesthetics, like, yeah, there's that one, I think is it Dina that mentions Joel in that initial bit when they're standing together, or one of the members of the camp does, but actually seeing him, I was like, okay, that's the green shirt, that's him, sort of just, that's still Joel, because there's such a comparison to how weathered and beaten and like torn down he looks in like the other screenshots. And I love as well how they put out a shot, reverse shot of him standing with Ellie, just to literally address the last time when I was obsessed thinking that Joel was a ghost, because they showed Ellie turning around, and then when it cuts to Joel, it's still a reverse shot, but the stuff that's behind him in that scene looks like a totally different scene, and everyone was like, oh my god, maybe this means that it's they're taking it from a different part of the game and he's not real. And that was, I think you know, one of the talking points there was that was how Joel looks, like that he sort of just looks like that in Last of Us 2. So for me it was kind of cool just to see that, like, it's a direct continuation, or at least some scenes are nigh on a direct continuation. But yeah, I guess it's like, what do you guys think they'll go for in terms of their relationship? Like, it'll just be beat for beat, this is why they end up hating each other. Like, Ellie has to find out the truth pretty quickly.
I have no idea how it's going to play out, and I quite like that. I think that there's potential for them to hate each other. There's potential for them to respect each other when Ellie goes through this horrible hatred story as well, and understands why these things happen. I think she does already at the end of The Last of Us. She understands it. She grasps it, and there's loads of speculation that she accepts that because she doesn't want to go against it or whatever, and there's never going to be any hate there because she chose that lie herself as well. But we'll see. I have no idea. I'm very happy to watch it play out, is the sort of thing. I've come here for speculation. I'm like, yeah, I don't know, let's see. But that's the way I want it to be as well. I think that things have shifted so much from what people first expected with him being with a ghost, and it seems very much not that he's a ghost now, that it could go
anyway. Josh, you were
anyway.
Maybe still on that train.
Right. For one, the tinfoil hat is still firmly on, and I still kind of believe that he might be there for some of the game, but he's brown bread before the first third.
It's too
over.
Obvious, though. They can't. Surely they can't.
I don't know.
They can't just kill Joel.
I don't know. But you made a point there, Scott, that I've never actually thought about. Even though it's been banged on about that the theme of the game is hate, I've never, ever thought about that being in reference to Ellie and Joel. I thought, like, their love or whatever, or their relationship would be the sort of, you know, the light in between this hatred happening around Ellie. I never thought about that being, you know, reflective of their new dynamic, and that that makes me a bit scared, to be honest.
There's a whole like line of like psychological thought that is all about the way that you process love and hate, and they're like in similar parts of the brain. I'm getting all super deep, but it's like, it's this whole thing where if you invite someone in, you know, and you reveal yourself to them, you fall in love. If that person then does something that is like like a big old negative or does something that puts you in a bad light, it'll hurt even more. It has that sort of like, you know, natural reaction where you just sort of snap and things like that. And and I like them exploring that sort of the dynamic that both that love and hate are on just two sides of the same coin, like to some degree, especially if they're in like this weird post-apocalypse where everything is amplified and survival is like, you know, paramount and things can go wrong at any moment. But yeah, in terms of like, because another thing in terms of characters that might just be straight up dead is they show Dina in this. They show her lying down with Ellie in bed, and I want way more of that. I want them to actually, I don't just want her to be the character that's like served up to be killed and then we move on to, you know, this is what you guys came back for. It's like the main event of Joel and Ellie. Like, I kind of hope there's some twist there that they are hiding, like that there's way more to that.
I kind of hope that she's taken away rather than killed straight away, like, but I agree that I don't want her used as some sort of plot device when she seems like she's got her own personality and loads of stuff that's really great and interesting about her. Like, I want to learn about Dina and not just have her as the fridge. So it would definitely be good for her to be taken and then see things from perhaps her perspective as well, or that get opened up later in the game, rather than, oh, okay, here's this girl that Ellie is really close with, all this sort of thing, pop, she's gone. Oh, Avenger.
It seems like it would be like a waste. And plus, like, there's so much that they do in terms of, you know, like over the course of the first game with Ellie just never really finding any solace. Like, I always feel for her. Like, the bit when she smiles in one of the early trailers absolutely breaks me, because I'm just like, the fact that she can be happy considering how much she's been through is one of the things that I'm there for the most. And I think, I would hope that Naughty Dog are better writers than just being like, look, here's her solace, here's her endpoint, and then we rip it away and that leads to her hating. I hope that there's just more to that. What do you guys think of the screenshot where it shows what looks like, I'm going to assume, Tommy's camp burning? Do you think it's Tommy's place?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think it has to be, you know. I feel like that's got to go. It's too much of a home base. And for me, like, when you play The Last of Us, it's very much about, like, the journey being on the road and something. I just can't see any reason for them to go on this adventure while that place is still around. And I feel like that would help you get around the fact that, you know, this new love interest might get fridged or whatever. If you have the entire camp sort of burning, everyone scattered, you know, you've essentially ruined Ellie's home, all of her ties, all of her relationships, her family, essentially. You know, she's lived there for years and years by this point. And I feel like if you get rid of that, that's more of a justification to, you know, get her out on this hateful revenge spree. And it means that Dina can perhaps still be alive and just kidnapped or scattered or found later on.
What if Ellie is the one who burns it to the ground?
I think that she is the one that burns it, but I don't know. I don't know if it's Tommy's camp. I think I think it's definitely that house you see where she goes in looking for Dina, like in the launch trailer, where she goes in, they grab her, and she's like, "Please don't do this." I think it's that house with the log fire in it, and I think she burns that house. Whether that's at Tommy's camp or someone else's camp that then comes after Tommy and that lot, I think that that's a little bit more open. I think Josh is absolutely right in that it'd be an excellent driving force for these characters to have their beautiful home base that they've lived and loved in for ages taken away. But that's it feels like another nasty beat that they're smacking them with when it could potentially be something different, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, yeah, stuff like that. I think Naughty Dog are way more nuanced writers than doing stuff, because we're kind of like speculating as if this was like a big, like, you know, high production TV show, and it's like, what the hell's going to happen next season? And like, oh my God, things are going to escalate. But I think Naughty Dog are just a way more subtle, I think Neil Druckmann is a way more subtle writer. And there'll be, I hope that a lot of those trailers are misdirection, and obviously these screenshots are very carefully chosen by them as well. Because like, they show Tommy and stuff as well, like Tommy hanging out with Jules. Some more, they can flesh him out a bit more. I didn't think he got that much screen time in the first one, and I kind of want more to do with like his past, like Joel and Tommy's history as smugglers or whatever they were.
Yeah, that's what, honestly, that's why I keep giving Naughty Dog so much of the benefit of the doubt, and keep almost, I'm almost like an apologist for this kind of like Dina sort of death plot, because it would be bad if she was just kind of, you know, used as a plot device. But the way they've cut the trailers, the way they've, you know, so far kind of manipulated what we have and haven't seen, I feel like they are hiding something quite big, or they're leading us down one way just to pull the rug, and I hope that's the case, because like you said, even though we've seen quite a lot of footage at this point, we haven't seen much gameplay, but the trailers have been pretty lengthy, we still don't necessarily know what the plot is, or how Joel's involved, or what Ellie is truly going after. Like you said, it's been heavily hinted that, you know, something happens to Dina, and it looks like something definitely is going to happen to her, whether it's death or being kidnapped or whatever, but it's still very, very vague, and there's, it's mad that we were a month away from it being released, and yet there was still so much of it. I know, sorry, just kick you in the shins at the moment. But there was still so much we didn't know about the game.
I mean, like stuff like in the early trailers when they showed, I'm sure it was like Ellie sitting with the guitar, which in one of the new screenshots they show Joel with the guitar, so obviously he's the one who teaches her, he says he's going to in the first game, as like this random bit of dialogue, but yeah, I'm sure in one of the early trailers, if not the reveal trailer, she says that she wants to kill all the fireflies, because isn't that what I think?
It was kill them all, we weren't sure who the people were, but yeah, she said she's going to kill them all.
Yeah, because that was where the Joel ghost thing came from, because it's her sitting playing with the guitar and then he's in the bedroom, but he won't come in. Ghosts can't come into the room, so I don't know.
That's vampires that need inviting in. Come on.
It's whatever fan theory needs it to be. But yeah, in regards to that stuff, like obviously there's the Seraphites, the other sort of hateful kind of makeshift religious group that they've shown, that the whole clip the wings thing. I remember doing a whole bunch of fan theory stuff as to what I think the term Seraph was, this like fallen angel and things without wings. I think that's what they're trying to debase people and bring them down to. But yeah, I mean, I think I'd be fine with them at least broaching like a straight up revenge arc, but that also seems too like basic, like in terms of there's got to be like we've always already said, like more to it. But I guess it's just in general, like if they were opening with that stuff, this is, hey, they take her away, it's the Seraphites, Ellie goes on a revenge kick, like I don't know,
just, I think based off, sorry Ashko,
no carry on.
No, yours was way more interesting than whatever I had to say, so...
No, Josh, I vote you, sorry.
Oh, fine, I'll make it very quick. Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, going off how they told the story in the first game, everyone went into that title expecting Ellie or Joel to die by the end, then obviously they didn't and subverted it. I feel like they did so well subverting the regular post-apocalyptic story in the first game that even if they do start with the revenge plot in the second, it will transform into something a bit more nuanced and a bit more detailed. At least that's the hope I have going into it anyway.
What was the thing you were going to say?
I was just going to say, I think because Naughty Dog, again, we all know that they're great writers and do wonderful things. If they did take the first game and subvert it, so it's just Ellie going through Joel's narrative beats, like obviously he loses his daughter and gets his replacement surrogate daughter, and that's him like learning to deal with his hatred and grief and all that sort of thing. And then we see Ellie's like visceral period of time where she has to go through that. I think that would also be a great reflection on how both of them change and how this world has changed them. So if it does follow some standard beats, I think they'll be done exceptionally well. But I don't think it's going to be predictable, whatever we get. I don't think we're going to be able to guess what it is, whether it's ghosts or no ghosts or kidnapping or killing.
Werewolves,
like,
and vampires.
Yeah. I think you're right, Ash. I think like the parallel between Ellie's journey in this game and Joel's in the first will be like very, very similar, because Joel, at the end of the first game, he's been that sort of like hardened killer, essentially. He practically ruined Tommy's life in that one exchange you get in the first game, you know, he made him do terrible, terrible things to survive. So he's seen how hatred sort of warps you, but how it makes you into this, you know, survivor at the end of the day. You do live, but whether that leads to a life worth living, you know, Joe finds out at the end of the first game that's probably not true. You know, he has to soften, he has to let people in, he has to let Ellie in, and that sort of changes him as a person. So I wonder if we see Ellie in this game start to go down a young Joel path, you know, start to be that murderer at all costs, you know, do whatever at all costs to survive, and then him coming in and being like, look, that only leads to hate and horribleness, and you need to kind of stop this, otherwise you're going to essentially become me. And
Joel just becomes Yoda, like hate leads to suffering, leads to The Last of Us 3. I mean stuff like that, I'm super curious, like where the hell they take the idea of it, like replicating, like, you know, her going back into a cycle of violence. I'm so here as well for what kind of feels like a new age, I don't know, like a video game trope, but like a literary trope, where you sort of, you analyse the end of where like a stereotype or an archetype ends. Like with Kratos, it was like, okay, you had this big rage monster who just wanted to kill everything and mutilate and destroy, and it's like, okay, what if that guy got older and then had to live with that? Like, what would that be like for this person to try and settle down, knowing that they're a complete broken mess? And could they ever love again? Do they deserve love and all that kind of stuff? And that's kind of why I thought God of War was fascinating. And then Uncharted 4, it's like, okay, Nathan Drake, quip happy, you know, Indiana Jones type dude, what if he settled down, got a mortgage, had a wife, and had a salvage job? Like, would he miss these big adventures? And I'm like, okay, can you then apply that to Joel? Because we've had him on this, you know, crazy mercenary, like he was on like a revenge kick too, like in terms of embodying, like taking Sarah and going on this big thing and destroying people's kneecaps to get Ellie back and things like that. And it's like, okay, if he then settles down, what does that guy even do? Like, he's achieved everything. What do you get from that?
I think the question for this one is more going to be like, can you base a life on a lie? That's going to be the main like driving force of it. Or like, what happens if you build a life on a lie, that or you settle down in a false way? You know what I mean? It's going to mirror those and parallel them, but it's all focused around this lie, isn't it? That's going to be the scary bit.
We should talk about the game as well, because I think there's a level of detail, there's a level of like graphical quality to this that is ridiculous. I think that Naughty Dog and Rockstar are pretty much level pegging. Like Red Dead Redemption 2 looked outstanding, but I don't know, it's probably just me, but I can't get past it. I don't see it as a negative, but I do when I look at it, and I look at this like opulent level of ridiculous graphical quality, I sort of only see the amount of time and hours and slaving away making sure that every blade of grass is in 4K, and I'm just like, do we, like, I'm not having a go at them for it, but I'm just like, I can't get past that. Do you guys like mostly just kind of, where do you guys come down on that level of detail that they've managed to achieve, that only really Naughty Dog and Rockstar have managed to do?
I like it a lot, Scott. I really, I do love it, especially when it comes to Rockstar and Naughty Dog. They're some of the only studios, like you said, who can achieve this level of detail. And I do think it has a genuine, tangible impact on the game as well, because it makes the game world feel more immersive and the characters feel more real. Like even something, I was watching something about Uncharted 4 the other day, in the way Nathan Drake brushes past Sam and he puts his hand on him, like that weird intimate moment there. Like you wouldn't get that in a different sort of, you know, single player game. And it's those little details for me that really, I don't know, they add something to the overall story, they add something to the characters that at the end of the day I think is worth it. Obviously we get to the whole topic of, you know, crunch and, you know, whether or not you're talking, treating their staff right, and obviously that stuff is like abhorrent, but I feel like there is a way you can address, you know, the idea of crunch culture without getting rid of these smaller details, because, you know, even in those exposés that, you know, Kotaku has done and stuff, all of the developers seem like they want to make these animations so good. They want to put the time in. Just, you know, that mentality gets abused and manipulated by, you know, these higher ups in the companies and stuff.
My thing is not the whole, like you said, the crunch thing is almost like a separate issue in terms of like the way that, like, yeah, some devs, like, you know, you have to all make sure you're working like 12, 14 hours, all the executives are coming by, make sure you're there to be seen and stuff like that. It's more the on a certain level, on a purely artistic level, like it's like, how much is this stuff necessary? Like, that's always my thing, because I don't know if you guys played Thomas Was Alone.
I didn't. No.
Thomas Was Alone is a story of just multiple little pixels, and the whole story is done through voiceover and text on screen, and they give each pixel a character, and it's ridiculous how effective that is. As I die, and even things like, you know, there's a little small like a big wide square one, and he's worried about his weight, he thinks he's a little bit overweight, and there's a tall one who thinks he stands out from the crowd and he's a bit self-conscious and everything. And I just think like that was the game that really put it up there, how much you don't need any of this stuff. And I just, for Red Dead 2, that game looked absolutely phenomenal. But like, I don't know, I'm just kind of like, yeah, there's a level of immersion, there's a level of like graphical fidelity, but you could probably do all of this without this level kind of thing.
I think so, but I think how close this game, like the first game, is to so many people's hearts, and what a seminal point it was in gaming, and all these other things about it, people are going to want as much of The Last of Us 2 as they can physically insert into their eyes. And it's the sort of thing where if they make it to the highest quality they can in our current climate, it'll last a hell of a lot longer than it would otherwise. Like the first Last of Us, I still think stands up with the remastered version and everything. So I think putting it at this point and doing as much as they can and having this proper, engaging, open, detailed world is part and parcel of its legacy.
Yeah, I think that they're making a statement with it, yeah.
Yeah, I think when it comes to like a studio, you know, like Naughty Dog, part of their appeal is this attention to detail, you know what I mean? Like their combat and their gameplay is always good, but it's never, you know, for my money, it's not industry leading, whereas the animations and, you know, the writing, those are the elements that everyone always holds up. So I think you would genuinely lose something if you didn't have... you know, something like the attention to detail firing on all cylinders.
I remember in Uncharted 4 when that video did the rounds of like, oh, if you shoot the pebble pile, one of the pebbles falls and then the whole thing cascades down. And I was like, that would have taken someone like a week, a couple of weeks, a month? I don't even know, like longer than as long as it should have taken to make some pebbles fall. And I'm just kind of, I look at that stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff in a certain game that I can't talk about that is just, you know, there's a load of different details. And I'm like, I look at it and I go, that's a very well rendered thing, but I don't need it. And it's more just me griping. But sometimes when I look at games like this, like I said, on the level that Naughty Dog and Rockstar are at, I look past it and I go, oh, that looks amazing. But I can only really, I see all the people just there going like, did you like the, we made the leaves move.
I think that really depends on what they're paying attention to, if you know what I mean. Like if it's it's like if you play those games that have like massive attention to detail on jiggle bones and titties, then that kind of changes where you see the people. Like I see people in something that breaks my immersion, whereas I think when it's making a world so close to reality as they can, I really like that. But yeah, only if it's done in the right circumstances and with the right respect paid to the people that are doing it. But yeah, I think it's just a great technical feat, and I think it makes The Last of Us the world that it is. So yeah, I don't look at it and go, oh no, it's too detailed. I think the detail is important to it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm going to see how it feels like in the end, but I just, part of me is just so aware of the teams that just slave away for weeks and months, even if they want to, doing this. I'm like, you could have put, like Josh said, the combat, like the gameplay is not industry leading, but maybe it could be if they put as much effort into the combat and the gameplay as they do into the visuals and, like I said, the general sort of depths of fidelity. But yeah, we should talk about the combat and stuff. Like, is there anything from the original that you want changing, like sort of gameplay improvements that you think were missing from the original?
More bricks. Put more bricks in it, because they're the best weapon ever, and they're the only thing I need, Scott. I don't need more bullets. I don't need more weapons. Give me more bricks. Give me more balls.
More things.
Give me
too.
Tiny little pebbles. I can skim off people's heads, and then I'll be.
Hey, look, they can solve the problem I have by making that stuff a gameplay mechanic. If you can chip off a little bit of the rock and then pick it up, and then you've got a makeshift throwable, then that immediately solves everything for me. So I would take all that stuff, but not to worry. We might as well end on a question from the hashtag WCGP over on Twitter, who from Chris Lickley. I thought that was Chris Licky, which is a good name. Chris Lickley, who says, during these strange times, how much of an impact do you think lockdowns will have on the gaming industry through gaming consumption and also development? Now, obviously, we touched about that stuff on that stuff before, but have you guys found yourselves playing more at the minute? Or are you losing yourselves in games more?
I spoke about this on Wednesday. It's mainly been that I'm taking so much time on the games that I am playing. So like Doom Eternal is taking so long because I'm doing every collectible, everything, that I'm kind of spending more time than I would just hammering through something. And like when I get Resident Evil 3, that's going to be a long, like, eke out as much as I can. Whereas I know other people are kind of shifting to, I can consume this many games in this much time. And I think that's a good way of spending it as well. I think they're a great way of plopping yourself out of this reality and into another one for a little bit, and there's nothing quite like that other than gaming. So I think they're great at the moment. As for lockdowns on the industry. I think it's just the delays, isn't it? That's the thing that's come from this.
There was like a wider ramification in terms of like E3 got cancelled and different trade shows have been cancelled, and there was a lot of tweets doing the rounds from different indie devs just saying like, you don't realize how important those conferences are in terms of people making connections and being able to get funding for projects and stuff. So I guess there is that, but obviously until those stories get detailed, you won't know the actual impact of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Josh, have you been living on Doom 3 as I've heard?
Oh yeah, Doom 3 is the best game of all time. I just want to put that out there. But no, like,
is it not Far Cry 2, mate?
Shut up. They can both be joint, you know, it's fine. Doom 3, Far Cry 2, Metal Gear Solid 2, it's the holy trinity. But I originally did what Ash was doing by taking my time on Doom Eternal, but since I've finished that, I've just gone absolutely mad and I'm playing about 6 games at once, which I never do. I normally focus on one, and I've got a bunch of different ones on the go. I'm going to get Resi 3 and Catherine tonight, and I do feel like you, Scott. I don't know how you do it. Like, if I wasn't in a lockdown, I'd have no time. I wouldn't even be able to watch.
I just sort of do it. I ended up buying that Modern Warfare 2 remastered thing just out of sheer impulse.
Well, because
I didn't know that it's not actually the new gameplay. I was like, oh man, the new gameplay, the 2019 Modern Warfare with Modern Warfare 2's campaign, that'll be brilliant. It's not that. PSA, it's just the original one with a reskin, and barely a reskin at that. And even when I looked at the screenshots beforehand, I was like, don't worry, it doesn't matter because it's going to play phenomenally. No, it's not. It's going to play like 2007. It's just, what a waste of money that is. I haven't even opened it. I just have it on the dashboard.
I love this. The man who doesn't care much about detail has just bought a detailed remaster of a game.
Well, no.
Got annoyed.
No, I got it for the gameplay, which isn't there. I thought it was going to play like the new Modern Warfare, and it doesn't. So that's a big catastrophic misfire. But yeah, I've been literally, I don't know how, I've completely lost track of time, but I do know that I've been up till 3 a.m. For too long now, and my life is a mess. And but you'll see why soon. But yeah, it's just I think for me, I keep getting lost and stuff. But Animal Crossing is the main one for me, because
awesome.
It's just that game. Yeah, like yeah, it's wholesome. It's kind of like it's twee and nice. And the first time a villager ran up to me and said my name and then gave me a parcel of present, it melted me. I thought that was amazing. But it's also that you just dip into it and you do as much as you want and you leave it, and there's no pressure. There's no time pressure. If you want to just do 10 minutes, you can check in and go, hey, morning, everyone, have a nice day, you can come back the next day. There's something about that drop in drop out thing that for me has been like just amazing to slot into everything else, to try and stave off the insanity. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ash Moorman.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
Bye. I probably could have done some sort of question at the end there. Let us know on social media, but I need sleep, so bye.
Don't forget the hashtag.
Yeah.
You did find the tag. It's a good tag. See
nice
ya.
One. You'll find it. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Toodaloo.
Oh. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.